On the last episode of Modern Practice, we spoke about the current issues pertaining to the shortage of available blood products, the reasons behind it, and some of the short-term ways to address it. Today, we continue our discussion. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, and I welcome back Akiva Farber, Senior Principal at Vizient. Akiva, welcome back.
Thank you, Tom.
So I'm curious, where did the magical number of having a hemoglobin less than 8 start in many of us having to feel compelled to transfuse a patient?
It appears that 8 has been the magical number, and others have embraced a lower number in time. And for example, today, many of the academics, medical centers are bringing it down to 7. And some of the other hospitals that manage large Jehovah Witness populations, as I mentioned earlier, have dropped it down to 6. And then, of course, we'll approach the patient or the family for permission. But again, the 8 was a standard that was set and believed to be the right number as compared to a normal hemoglobin that could be as high as 11 or 12 or 13. So it did represent a compromise in your normal hemoglobin. But again, let's not focus on a magical number. Let's focus on the stability of the patient.
Treat the patient, not the number.
Exactly.
So you went into some brevity on some of the efforts that we make at Vizient to help in actually reducing transfusion. Let's talk about specifically packed RBCs. What efforts do we have at Vizient to actually help some of our members?
To help them look specific at RBCs, there's a couple of different strategies. At Vizient, because we are a full-service consulting service, we will first look at the entire book of business, and namely every product and every unit of blood. And let's talk just specifically about red cells, as you mentioned. Red cells have a 42-day shelf life. So we look at the age of the product. We look at when was the product delivered to the hospital, the cost of the product. And so we'll review all of those and we'll develop strategies where the units are fully utilized, fully transfused, so there's no wastage and there's no expiration. And then we'll make sure, based on that, we'll start to look at how often patients are transfused and look at the service lines. So what we are doing in many cases is with the chair people and the clinicians and surgeons in that particular service line, we're bringing them data that shows that the top hospitals and the top physicians use as few as X number of red cells for these types of procedures. And so they can get acclimated to a lower number. Again, how do they get there? They use the data and they use the clinical charts to understand how best to manage patients. So we want to drive their utilization down by looking at the red cell utilization and by showing them the number, the magical number, for example, for cardiothoracic surgery, where in the past, as early as 10 years ago, we might have used 4 to 6 units of red cells per cardiothoracic surgery. We are doing somewhere in the neighborhood of about 1.9 and 3, which is more than a 50% reduction in utilization. Again, paying close attention on how and when to transfuse and how stable the patient is. Again, getting away from a number or getting away from, hey, let's give the patient some blood. It's not going to hurt them. And that way they'll be more stable. That's the old way.
You've mentioned in reference to this, some of the feedback from the Society of Thoracic Surgeons, but I also recall a time in my career, if I only transfused one unit of blood, I would have to go before the medical review board. Are there any other societies that feel this way, or medical or surgical societies that feel this way?
You're the physician, I'm the laboratorian, but let me just say this. If I go back 27 years, I actually taught second year medical students at New York Medical College hematology and basic blood banking. And yes, in medical school, most of the physicians, if not all of them, were taught that if you ask for one unit of blood, you'll be chastised because one unit implies that the patient is stable, but we just want to get them to a magical number. If you ask for type and cross 2 units, which is a classic order by most physicians and hospitalists and others who are permitted to order product, they will write type and cross 2 units. And our motto has now been, why 2, why not 1? Why 1, why not none? We're trying to break that tradition of type and cross 2, which quote unquote used to legitimize transfusion. If 2 are indicated, then 2 is the right number. If 1 is indicated, so be it. If none, and if possible, is manageable and the patient will stabilize accordingly and then come back to his or her normal hemoglobin, then that's the right number.
Yeah, I totally see that. So why don't we go into autologous transfusions? Isn't this a way to deal with the issue of elective procedures, of how to avoid blood shortages with them?
Okay, so autologous transfusion is a strategy. What is meant by autologous transfusion, as you know, is pre-depositing a patient's own blood. So a patient is now a donor, so to speak, to himself. You're donating your own blood prior to surgery. It is a strategy. It is a good strategy for some, not a good strategy for others, because if you have a low hemoglobin, donating a unit of blood only to get it back in surgery, it doesn't make sense. And there's always the possibility that unit gets broken in a centrifuge or is not delivered back to the hospital on time. It also has to be tested through the system, even though it is for the same patient. So at the hospital or at the blood center, you'll have to donate 5 days in advance. So autologous transfusion is a strategy. It was seen as a strategy more so in years past when HIV was first discovered and people were frightened to receive anyone else's blood except their own. It has fallen out of favor over time, though it is still a strategy for some. From our perspective, we're seeing more and more surgeons feel more and more comfortable about patients coming into the surgery with their own blood not having been pre-deposited, so that they have their full hemoglobin, they're up to speed, we don't have to wait on the product, and managing accordingly. So autologous and directed donation, if I may add. Directed donation means that Auntie Sarah is going for a surgery and her nephew John will pre-deposit his unit for Auntie Sarah. Of course, they have to be types compatible. So there's always that possibility that John and Auntie Sarah are not compatible. So that unit would be fully tested and made available to the general public. But that is also fallen out of favor. Again, using the strategies of transfusion alternatives, using the restrictive transfusion, appropriate restrictive transfusion methodologies or algorithms, that is really the best way to go.
Are there any cost savings connected to preoperative clinics? As a hospitalist, I often would get pushback of using IV iron or even EPO many times as a way to try to avoid transfusions.
They were wrong to give you that negative feedback and to restrict your utilization of those red cell stimulating drugs, because those products do not carry any viral marker risks. They do have a cost associated with them, probably very close to what a unit of blood is. Depending on the situation, they are reimbursable, where the first 3 units of blood in a hospital are part of your DRG, and they're certainly advantageous to the patient. So IV iron, a common drug that can be given to a patient that doesn't have chronic anemia in far enough in advance of surgery, is an ideal way to manage a patient, get their hemoglobin up where it needs to be, safe above any risk of stability, and then manage the patient accordingly. That is our goal. Our goal is to reduce the amount of red cells transfused in our country today, and other countries, as mentioned earlier, have done this successfully. And interestingly enough, when we find ourselves in blood shortages, as we do today, magically we triage our supply and find that by reducing our transfusions, we're maintaining stability on the patients and they're doing equally as well. So we've learned to manage with less when we're forced to manage with less. It's kind of like basic economics. If you only have $2.50 in your wallet and it's lunchtime, you'll magically find a way to buy something satisfying for $2.50, but that latte is not part of the menu to me.
Yeah, I totally get that. Do you think that most CFOs know that they're eating the first 3 units with most DRGs?
I believe the CFOs do. I believe the CFOs are now becoming more and more aware. They're looking at their blood expenses. They're looking at their lab expenses. They're looking for ways to cut costs. And they're encouraging, as well as the chief medical officer, as well as everyone else in the institution, I would hope, they're encouraging that the lab and the surgeons and the clinicians work together in reducing overall transfusion.
Old blood versus new blood. Do we have any data on that?
Way back when, and I started my career in 1974, and the joke I tell is that God created blood in 1973, so I've been there from the beginning. Years ago, once upon a time, we used fresh whole blood as the best product for a patient. Now, obviously, whole blood has the advantage of total volume for patients that have had serious blood loss. Back in the early 70s or later 70s and early 80s, we started a componentized product, namely break a unit of whole blood down into its components. And there are as many as four components, namely the red blood cell, platelet, the plasma, and the cryoprecipitate. And we encourage physicians and clinicians to use the individual product to address the individual clinical issue. And once again, fresh whole blood is now being used in certain trauma situations because in trauma, there's a fair amount. In multiple trauma, there is a fair amount of blood loss. So volume as well as red cells are extremely important. And the fresh unit of blood has higher clotting factor values. So it does give some advantages. There hasn't been any real white papers written as yet. So it's kind of in between clinically sound and anecdotal. We'll have to wait. I am working with a few trauma surgeons who have said they do see better outcomes. But right now, the method of choice is to use individual components to address that particular clinical condition. So if your hemoglobin is low and you want to get the hemoglobin back up, you use the traditional red blood cell. If your platelet count is low and you're bleeding and you need to form a platelet plug to stop the bleeding, then platelets are indicated. And the same for plasma, where your fibrinogen levels are lower or your factor VIII levels are lower, you want to use cryo. So the individual components can address the individual critical need.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. I want to thank Akiba Faber for joining us. If you'd like to contact Akiba, we put his email address on the resource section of our podcast page. We'll return next week to continue our discussion. If you have any additional questions pertaining to modern practice or even want to contact me, please contact us also at our email at modernpracticepodcast@vizientinc.com. It's also available on the resource page. And please join us for other Modern Practice Podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. Also listen to and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast and the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.